Let's say hello to the one and only Peter Labardius, who is set to join us on Thursdays at this time here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. But this Thursday, no big show. This Thursday, we've got a triple header of football for you to kick off week 12 of the NFL season, starting at 10:30, Texans and Lions, 2:30, Washington, Dallas, and then the night game, Ravens and Steelers. So we've got a NFL triple header for you on Thursday on American Thanksgiving. So no big show in 2 days' time. So he said, well, let's say hello to Peter Labardius on Tuesday this week and bring it back to regular the following week. Hello, Mr. Labardius. How are you?
Hi, Patty. I'm good.
It's Patty and Mr. Nault along with you, the color voice.
Hi, guys.
Of the Calgary Flames joins us. Let's we talked about this about an hour ago. Let's bring you into a fun topic that we kicked around, and I'll give you the genesis as to why we kicked this around. We were talking yesterday about Tampa Bay's cap situation. They've got just under $3 million to work with. They've got three RFAs they need to sign: Anthony Cirelli, Mikhail Sergachev, and Eric Chernak. And the Flames right now kind of don't have that third natural right shot defender on their blue line, it's at least when it comes to NHL experience. And I said, okay, well, pie in the sky, could you see a fit of Eric Chernak and the Calgary Flames? And we kicked that around. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on that kind of speculative conversation.
Like the player. I always think of it this way, Pat. Where is he going to fit? Not necessarily now, but what do you have? And where are you going potentially down the road? Does he potentially fill a void? Yes. I mean, would you invite him into your group of six today? Of course I would. But is that a spot going forward that potentially you really need and would spend money on? And right now, off the top of my head, I would probably say no. And I really like the player because as of today, what do I know? Well, I know on the right side of my defense that my top two guys on the right side are Chris Tanev and Rasmus Anderson. So do I see Chernak potentially being in a situation to jump and climb into my top four today? I don't. So if that player, who is still young, and I like him, remember him very well, first couple of in-person viewings or when I watched him play for Erie at the 2017 Memorial Cup in that particular event in Windsor, Ontario. So I've liked him. I've liked him internationally. I like his edge. I like what he brings, but again, what's the value in the third pairing? Patty, what can you spend? And going forward, is there a place for him in the time where the money is going to grow?
Right.
So I'd love to, like, listen, if you could say to me right now, here's your pairings, Giordano and Anderson, Hanifin and Tanev, and Valimaki and Chernak, sign me up all day. That's a heck of a group of six. But that's not the only part of the equation, right, fellas? It's do you have a spot, and what kind of money can you commit in understanding? I mean, you've got Anderson in a good spot,
yep,
for sure. You've got Tanev for the next four. So, you know, unless you see this guy, you know, superseding one of those guys, and there would be people that maybe would, what are you spending? And you have to think, too, about what Juuso Välimäki might potentially, and I use the word potentially, get going forward. So good conversation. Love the player. At the right price, would take him off their hands today. Do I necessarily see him as a long-term fit? Maybe.
Here's, and I love the chat. Here's, and something that Will and I and Logan didn't talk about when we talked about it earlier. But the other really interesting thing to me is that Tanev, over 30 already. But I'm not so much worried about that. It's more the fact that And look, I like the Tanev signing, but I do think you almost have to assume that he's going to miss a good chunk of time. He's never played an 82-game season. He on a season-by-season basis, misses somewhere between 10, 15, 20 games per season. So I think you have to think about that. At least I think about that when I have the conversation. Are you comfortable with somebody else moving into kind of that second pairing spot? There's another opportunity for Chernek to potentially prove his worth and why the Flames would target him.
Well, listen, if you have the room and you can make it happen, as I said right off the top, I'm going to make it happen right now. If it fits, for sure. If I can get this guy locked up for, however many years, I'd welcome him tomorrow. He'd kind of be the perfect fit in a lot of ways to fill out your group. I just, most of the time, I don't look at these situations, Patty, necessarily as utopia. I look at them more in terms of reality. And the reality is that you went out and you invested, and I'm a huge proponent in it, although I know that there's been lots of polls and lots of talk about Tanev, and you talked about the injuries. So, you know, that's how much can you invest? If you had the room and could make it work, why wouldn't I do it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd go out and get Anthony Cirelli in 1 second if I could make that one happen too. But I have to think about it as a big puzzle. And I always think when you put together a National Hockey League defense, when my top four is solidified to begin with, I'm in good shape. So they're in pretty good shape right now. Now, Mark isn't getting any younger. At some point, somebody's going to have to move into that position. So I always look at it, Pat, from, you know, you're always looking at it as a puzzle. So when one player moves out of a certain spot, who are you going to move in?
Yeah.
And what's the cost in doing that? And I always think, you know, with third pairing types, not to say that they're a dime a dozen, but I can go out and get those kind of guys. So, for example, maybe the better conversation somebody could have is much about adding Chernak to this group might have been, Would you see a scenario where you would have went out and gotten him, considering his age, where your team is, the strength of your team's age group, and I think we'd all agree it's kind of in that 25 and under situation, to potentially adding him, you know, in a more, like, if I'm going to pay a guy at this point, how do I pay a guy a lot of money potentially as a five in the world that they're in, with the money that they have? Like, aren't we kind of disrespecting him a little bit?
Well, because Will brought up the very important point that, well, right now the cap situation for Calgary wouldn't necessarily allow it. What I think you'd have to do to make it happen, and again, this is very pie in the sky, but
yeah, this is more utopia than anything else.
Exactly. But what I think you'd have to do is sign him to kind of a 2-year bridge type contract that keeps the cap hit down, and then you might be in a better spot salary cap wise once you get to the next contract. And you'd also have to give up the assets to bring him in and probably have to move out somebody else. And Will, that's kind of your point, is that you'd have to probably lose a Bennett or a Ryan or somebody like that to make it work on the other side.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, more to kind of lose point, I think Chernak is absolutely a player that I am a big fan of. I think he fits, obviously, right in the Flames' age window at 23. He's a guy that I think Brad Treliving would love to add. The problem that I have, and that's why I think this is more of a, you know, a fantasy-type scenario, is because I just don't know if what you're going to have to give up to make it work based on your own cap situation, to me, I don't know if that makes it worth it. And to Lou's bigger point, where does Chernak fit 5 years down the road or 4 years down the road? I don't know. And if I'm going to, you know, give up essentially what it would likely take to make all the pieces work in this Chernak deal, I would need to be fairly confident that he's going to be in my top four in those you know, the next 4 years, and then likely the decade after. Not to say that, you know, Sam Bennett is an untouchable and you're giving up a ton of assets, but you add it all together and that ends up being essentially, you know, four, five, six pieces in some cases for maybe one to come in. So it's a fun conversation. I think there's a lot of talk about the Flames back end and going into next season, especially on that right side. But that's where I come down on it, Lou. I just think the subsequent steps that have to be taken after that initial move with Tampa, I just don't know if I deem it worth it.
Well, exactly my thought, pal. And here's the thing. Okay, so again, where are you placing your focus? Okay, if you place your focus, and I know where Patty's going. I mean, well, how much would you love to have Chernak if Tanev goes down and you just throw him straight into your top four? Because frankly, he's probably not far away in the right situation from being a top four guy right now.
Exactly.
So I get that part of it and think about that immediately. Now, here's the interesting part for me. In some ways, if you talk about the future, what do I know? Rasmus Anderson, right-handed. I got him situated. Chris Tanev. Like, all of a sudden, you have an aging Mark Giordano who's on the left side but won't be around forever as much as we wish he would, and he might defy odds and be around longer than you think. I think there's still a lot of talk about, you know, your next left-handed defenseman, who is Noah Hanifin. You've got, I think, the emerging, and my guess going forward is the guy that will just absolutely find his way into top four duty in Juuso Välimäki. So if that progresses the way you think, today I'm not as concerned about what's on the right side as I was a few months ago.
Yeah.
Because now I got a better feel for Rasmus Anderson, who I think is a top pairing guy potentially all day long. He gives me everything I need. I've gone out and I've committed to Tanev, and I know exactly what I'm going to get there outside of for people who are concerned. And it's fair concern about injury. All of a sudden, I'm concerned about a right-handed guy in my third pairing. I got some guys on the left.
Yeah.
So yeah. I might be more concerned now about answering this question. For me, one of the big prevailing questions going forward is, what is Juuso Välimäki? Is he a three? Is he a for sure top four? Is he a top two? What is Noah Hanifin going forward? Is a guy who's almost played 400 games. Well, right now he's top four all day. But is he top four that when Mark Giordano is gone, is he a top pairing guy for you?
Right.
But the great thing is, and I love this conversation, for most teams, it's hard to go, I got everybody I want 1 through 6. This team's in pretty good shape all of a sudden, and they still have people, you know, I watched them for a period today, 23-year-old Johannes Kinvall, who's having another great year in the Swedish league.
Come on, like, on hockey just, TV.
Yeah, I've spent a little time there. So again, I'm always, when I think about building your team, I feel really strong about always having good options to for sure fill out your top four. Yeah, I'd love to have a perfect top six, but I still probably have more questions, you know, in other areas. So if I'm going to spend any kind of money, I just have to always prioritize.
Right.
So, you know, Patty, if I can get this guy right now for a couple of years and it works and the math works and it's two more years to have a guy like this in your program, where Mark Giordano probably, you know, what we know what he has left on his deal and his age. Well, that's it, right? For me, it's always about filling the puzzle pieces.
Yeah. Well, and just to close it out, my last thought would be, like, and again, I have no idea if Julien Brisebois would ever even entertain it. I really don't. I just know that they've got three RFAs to sign, and they don't have a lot of cap space, and they're in a bit of a cap crunch right now. So maybe a team like Calgary could exploit that. The thing that makes me so interested in a guy like Chernak is that I think that we're talking about a really, like, I loved him in the playoffs. I thought he was one of Tampa's best two or three defensemen in the postseason. I thought he was a huge contributor to them winning the Stanley Cup. I thought he was great. And to be able to get a guy who I think could be a future long-term member of this team's top four, even if he doesn't start that way, to your point, Lou, that's what makes me so intrigued about the conversation. It's kind of like, it's kind of similar to the Dougie Hamilton acquisition going way back, maybe not at the same high-end level, but it's like, okay, he's young and he helps us now, but what could he be down the road? That's what makes it so interesting to me. But I think it's that.
It's the same for me. Yeah. Like, I'm completely on that same page. Listen, if I can make that work and I can give myself somebody of that ilk at that age to be in my group, like, your job is to make your team the best that you can be. And I've already, so I don't need to go there again, guys. I mean, that's a pretty good group of pairings to start your season for if you sure. ever added this guy.
Yeah. Peter Labardius is our guest. He usually joins us on Thursday. We don't have a show this Thursday, so kind enough to join us on this Tuesday. He'll be joining us on the big show until the return of Hockey Central. Let's shift gears a little bit, Lou. You were denied some great viewing at noon your time today. Two players have tested positive for COVID-19 at the Hockey Canada selection camp. Obviously, we're hoping that they can keep this under control and doesn't spread wider in terms of across the team. But they were hoping to make some cuts after this scrimmage. So I don't really have a question, but just your thoughts on kind of this derailing of camp, if you will, with Hockey Canada.
Well, it makes me nervous. Yeah. You know, it makes me nervous because just as we saw in the summertime, you know, when you eventually end up getting your group into the bubble, you're hoping that that's the biggest thing. But guess what? Going back to the summer, you know, that's what, for people who wondered why they started the camp as early as they did, for people who wondered why, you know, the number of players to begin, well, isn't this the kind of circumstance that you were looking to deal with in part? I mean, we don't listen. There's a rule in this situation where the way it works is you're supposed to confirm to the IIHF who you want in the bubble shortly after December the 6th. Well, that's less than 2 weeks from today. So, you know, this has some potentially serious tournament-altering possibilities, but if you can control it, understand where it's come from. I would say this: you hope, because the groups are already in cohorts to begin with, you hope that you can keep it on one side, if you know what I mean. You don't want it spreading all over the place, because now you got massive problems. But if you contain it, and because it's November the 24th, and everybody officially goes in to the Edmonton bubble December the 13th, now you've got time. And you have enough kids to potentially make it work. But it's concerning for sure, because you can only imagine the steps that they took and, you know, all the medical people. And, you know, they've been very, very diligent, Hockey Canada, in trying to prevent exactly what's gone on. But remember, too, that, you know, different players have also, you know, guys are coming in from the NCAA. You know, they're coming in from a lot of different places. And as I think testing can happen, you know, you might have the first two tests that you take that are negative, and whammo on the third one, because we haven't gotten to 14 full days, now you might hit. So, yeah, it's a concern, my friend. For sure, it's a concern. But, hey, listen, isn't the Alberta government making a significant decision today coming up there?
There's a press conference in an hour. Yeah.
Right. So
Alberta now has the most active cases of COVID-19.
Yes, I saw that today. So, listen, we're, you know, I live right now in an area where you know, we're in a 28-day lockdown situation. You know, I've been in a more populated, numbers have been high. That's where I am right now. And guess what? Here's all I know about life right now. We can operate basically day by day. Outside of that,
yep.
What else can you do? And then you have to ask yourself the big questions about, okay, what is it like? What's the end game? Where do we want to get to? And in this situation, I've never seen a more difficult situation because everybody, it hits everybody different. Everybody's personally affected. Everybody sees it from a different place. But at a certain point in time, the math right now says one thing to me, and that's that the way people are going about their business collectively needs a reboot.
Yeah, I saw a few weeks ago, it was at the start of this pandemic, we were all on the same team, and now it looks like we're a bunch of individuals again. So we've got to get back to being a team. Yeah, 100%. Otherwise, it's never going to get better.
No,
on a hockey side of things, it was a bit of a stunt in momentum, I'd say, because it looked like a pretty good weekend for both Flame prospects, Lou.
Listen, I've always felt for quite some time, even though, you know what, I've watched both guys, you know, about the same, you know, because Connor's area is from the West. I've been tracking him pretty close since his 15-year-old year. You know, Pelche really came into prominence for me in his draft year when I had a chance to watch him five times at the Hlinka-Gretzky. Listen, here's what I've seen in those first two scrimmages. I wasn't really that, you know, I probably have more interested in Connor because I've watched Connor, saw him at the top prospects, saw him play really well a couple years ago at the World Under 18, know that he's done nothing but progress, but I wanted to see him, like, listen, guys, bottom line, the competition at this camp is off the charts. This is one of those years, if everybody was healthy, like, we could almost take two teams in this year with these age groups and have a chance to medal. That's the kind of group that is gathered in Red Deer, and I'm not kidding. That's a fact. This is a strong group. So, you know, in the case of Jacob, I love everything about him. He's competitive. He's versatile. It looks like he's added another half step to his skating. He's around the puck every shift. He knows where to put himself when he doesn't have it. He knows where to be when he does have it or someone else has it. You can use him up and down the lineup. He's already been used to penalty kill. I'll be stunned if he's not in. Stunned. Now, with Connor, just because of the competition of the camp, you know, so I was watching him probably more closely on the weekend than almost anybody. I received word, Will, going into the scrimmages from a very good source that the talk coming out of the first three or four days before the inter-squad games was that Zeri was one of the top three or four players. And, you know, the first game on Saturday, pretty impressed. They used him at center, made some things happen. I love his vision, competes incredibly hard, wins a lot of 50-50 battles. And then I saw him play with Kirby Dach and Philip Tomasino in the game on Sunday. Were they ever? I mean, first of all, we saw a lot of what Dach could do, I don't know, in the NHL playoffs up against two pretty good players.
Patty was a big fan of Dach in the playoffs. I
love that guy.
Right. Okay. So, you know, Sunday he looked like the best junior player maybe on planet Earth. That's how good he was. And again, Connor playing on the wing rather than down the middle. What did he do? Again, he makes plays. He sees the game. He competes. I've been so impressed with just his compete. You know, he wins a lot of puck battles. You know, I could see on Sunday that he still defensively sometimes, you know, he's a center, right? That's where he plays most of the time. But I'm now more convinced that, you know, the Calgary Flames have found themselves a very, very good player. And now my guess is he's going to compete for an NHL job sooner rather than later.
Peter Labardius with us. Just a final thought before we let you go, my friend, because I know Will gave you the little fun shot about watching some of the games in Europe right now. Okay, so tell me, who have you, we know we talked last week about Valimaki, and you've seen him play in Liga, but who else, like, who have you, I know you've been watching KHL games and some of the games out of Russia. Any other Flames prospects that you have been able to lay your two eyes on from thousands of kilometers away?
Well, I talked about Kinval. So I've seen a little of him a couple of times. He would be one.
Have you seen Chechelev or?
I have seen the two guys I have seen more than anybody else are Nikolayev and Chechelev.
Chechelev.
Yes, that's the Russian. I don't know Russian. I don't pretend to know Russian, but I've been listening a lot. And frankly, I've probably watched more of those two guys than anybody else. And I was a little surprised, not completely, you know, when the Russians named their 28 or 29 guys, I was hopeful that Nikolayev might make his way into that group. He didn't. I didn't expect that where Chechelev is concerned, but, you know, I like his size. I like his athleticism. You know, he went from the MHL, which is the junior league, to the second league, the VHL, and he has more than held his own. Like, I've yet to see him. I bet I've seen him not in full games, Patty, but I've seen him in parts of games, probably six or seven now, and he's been really, really good in all of them, including on Sunday where his team was down 2-1. I watched the third, and he made about four or five outstanding saves to give his team an opportunity to rally. They scored two in the last 45 seconds and won 3-2. So I'm trying to keep a peek on everybody, and it's been fun. I can't flip around fast enough, and my eyes are paying a significant price, but COVID has allowed me, a hockey nut to begin with, to watch all kinds of guys and, you know, teams that I just never would have probably had the opportunity or in some cases time to do. So it's been fun.
Will, you got one last one or should we wrap?
I do have one. I'm going to absolutely butcher the name, so I don't want to do that. But Lou, it's happened here, kind of breaking as we're talking to you, knowing the province you come from. I just wanted to ask or see if you had a parting thought, as it's been announced that Saska Moose has passed away at the age of 86, a Saskatchewan hockey legend, Chief Running Deer, the first, obviously, Indigenous player to play in the NHL, and he dropped the puck at last year's Heritage Classic in Regina. Yeah. I just wanted to see if you had a thought, knowing the province you come from. I'm sure you've crossed paths with him a couple of times.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, Freddie Sasakamoose, you know, legendary, you know, for Indigenous people in the province of Saskatchewan. Met him on a couple of occasions, incredible gentleman, really good player in his day, has made, you know, a massive difference in his life, in his own community. He's revered, he's highly respected. Just a wonderful, wonderful man from the couple of times. So heard that he was very, very ill and not surprised by the news. But, he touched a lot of people. And, you know, forget about goals and assists or what you do in hockey. He made a big difference for a lot of people in his community. And that legacy of making the world a better place goes on for longer than even he will ever know. So sad, but great, great memories, and sad to all his family and friends and all the people that he gave so much of himself to.
Be well, Lou. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, my friend.
That was fun, guys. Okay, have a good one.
That was great.
That was good stuff.
See you, buddy.
Man.